From our studios in Cuenca, Spain, I'm Kate Jetmore with Listen. Today we kick off season 4 with a very special series on language. Our guests range from translators and simultaneous interpreters to teachers and international travelers. We'll explore the many ways human beings communicate with one another, both verbal and nonverbal, going far beyond words to look at vocal tone, gestures, and the music of a given language. My guest today is Laura van der Kerken. A native of Belgium, Laura has participated in exchange programs in such countries as the US, Spain, France, and England. Recently, she and her Spanish husband biked from Belgium to Spain, then backpacked in Colombia and Ecuador to wrap up the ultimate dream honeymoon. Laura, who's now working in the tourism sector in Belgium, plans to keep on dreaming and traveling. Welcome, Laura. I'm so glad you could join me today.
Hi, Kate. I'm honored to be on your show. I'm excited.
Wonderful. Well, let's start with a little context. Talk us through where you're from and tell us a little bit about what you experienced while growing up there.
As you mentioned, I'm from Belgium, which for, you know, many of you that may not know, that's a small country in the middle of Europe, and it's a very densely populated country as well. So I like to say that I'm from a small town, but my Spanish husband makes fun of me because he'll go, it's not a town, it's like 40,000 people. Well, to me, that's a town. I'm a city girl, I guess you could say, which, you know, is just a given when you live in Belgium. And as we're on the language episode, I might as well go ahead and mention the most peculiar thing about Belgium is that we have 3 official languages. So that is Dutch, French, and German. And it just makes people very confused about which language I speak. So while growing up, I think that kind of affected me as a person. You know, you just feel an attachment basically to so many different languages because you're also very near to other languages, you know, right on the border or on television, radio. So yeah, that's a little bit of my background.
And how did that play out in your childhood? What did that look like practically? I mean, what language did you speak at home, for example?
So I'm from the north of Belgium, and it's really Dutch only. So with my parents, at school, with my friends, I only spoke Dutch, which my dialect is actually called Flemish. So it's kind of like American and British English, I think you can compare it to. Mm-hmm. They're both English, but American English is very different to British English, right? Mm-hmm. So I speak Flemish, which is the Dutch from Belgium. It was only Dutch. And then when you're in high school, you get French, English, and German classes. And I do think what is special about my childhood maybe is that, for example, my dad, he grew up in Brussels, which is the capital, and that's officially a bilingual zone. And sometimes he got called names like, oh, you dirty Flemish person or something like that. And it's kind of... it's a little bit shocking maybe because definitely not everyone is like that, but it does give you a sense of identity like, oh, okay, I am a Flemish person and I speak Flemish. It definitely formed me as a person, I guess I should say.
And is that still an energy that you might come across in Belgium, that people, you know, there's sort of a measure of racism or judgment depending on which part of Belgium you're from or which language you speak?
I would definitely think that just because there is no contact at all with between the north, Dutch-speaking, and the south, mainly French-speaking. Like, we have different radio stations, television channels, everything is separate. We have the same king, but that's about it. You know, we've been without a government for another year because just it's... I kind of like to explain it like 2 countries in one. So I remember, for example, one time when I was a teenager, I went to Brussels to, you know, just go shopping or whatever. And I went to a bar and just asked for some water or a Coke. Can't quite remember. And they didn't want to serve me. They said, well, when you speak Dutch, I won't serve you. So I was like, oh, okay, this is new. And I should have just gone up and left, you know, but I didn't.
Had you ordered in Dutch, or were they
yes,
basing
exactly.
that on your accent or something?
No, I ordered in Dutch. Yes, sorry, I forgot to mention that. So I just ordered in Dutch thinking it's a bilingual zone. I'm allowed to speak my language here. And they just answered in French like, okay, sorry, if you're not ordering in French, you won't get anything, basically. And I was just so flabbergasted and just ordered in French, but I should have left.
But, wow. Yeah. But yeah, those are those moments in life when you look back and it's so clear what you should have done. But in the moment, you just freeze up. It's like, you just can't even believe it's happening.
Right, exactly. I was just, you know, it's also the first time in my life that has ever happened, because I do think that the native language that you speak, it's the language you think in, you feel in, so it's very important to who you are as a person. So when that happened, I was just like, wait, what was that? And what should I have done? But I do want to stress that this is definitely not everyone, you know? This was just one individual, and I would love for our country to get closer. Like, the two parts are very separate, as I said, and I would love for our, you know, government or celebrities maybe to really put in the effort so that we understand each other better. But for right now, I think that language is what's separating us mostly. Definitely.
I want to go back to what you said about high school, because you just completely you were just so blasé saying, okay, then you go to high school and you study French, English, and German. I believe those were the three languages you said.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Wait a second. So you turn 14 or whatever age you are when you start high school in Belgium. You turn 14, you go to school, and suddenly you have to study three new languages?
Actually, in my school, normally, French starts when you're 10 years old.
Okay.
And you're obligated to do so. So that's we just have elementary school and then high school.
Mm-hmm.
But so yeah, normally you start French when you're 10 years old, but I actually started out with French when I was only 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So my school did it earlier. Which also, for the South, they're not obligated to learn Dutch. So that's also something a lot of people are like, hey, we in the North are learning your language. what about you guys?
But interesting.
I don't mind, because I love languages. So for me, every language I learn is just a huge plus, right? But so yeah, then English starts when you're about 12 years old. And I started German when I was maybe 15 or 16. But no, actually, I never thought of it. You know, your question is kind of funny to me, because I never thought, like, wow, this is crazy, or because we're so used to it. Also, because the country is so small. You know, it takes me a one-hour drive to either get to France or Germany, or, you know, 1 hour to England by train. So it's, yeah, I think it's a natural thing. I never wondered. There are some high schools that also teach Spanish, so then they have an extra...
Wow.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Do you think, I mean, I'm guessing that it didn't really impact you in an overwhelming way, because you were surrounded, I mean, that's just the way that the country's set up and the educational system is set up. You know, it's probably the way your parents did it. If you have siblings, it's the way they did it. All your friends were doing it. So it's just like part of the culture, and so you just accept it? I mean, is that the way you would describe it?
Yeah, definitely. Also, because so I went on exchange to the U.S. for a year, and there I noticed that you're able to basically choose your classes, which was something that was very new to me, because for us, we kind of say, oh, I want to get into economics or psychology. Like, you have to pick one main domain. But then once you're in that domain, so to speak, you're just given your classes. So it's not like, do you want to do English or German? No, it's like French, English, German, and then, well, Dutch, of course, your own native language. So, yeah, I guess I would say it's a given, also because, which is, you know, I don't think many countries have this, but we have everything subtitled on TV. So even, you know, that given as a child, it's you're so used to hearing all these other languages that, yeah, I never really thought of it as a shock in high school or anything.
So when you say things are subtitled, what you're also saying is that they're not dubbed. So you're hearing the original language.
Yes.
You're seeing people speak that original language, and you're absorbing the sounds that come with each of those languages. Is that right?
Yes, exactly. And well, we do have some little kids' movies, like Ice Age or Shrek or Finding Nemo, whatever, they will exist in... It's also funny, on the DVD you can either pick Dutch from Holland or Flemish from Belgium. So yeah, when you're a kid you see things in Flemish. But yeah, as you grow up, you know, I remember watching The Simpsons and stuff like that when I was really small, and you're not able to read as fast yet, so you're kind of just going along with the episode as, okay, what just happened? Because you're trying to read everything, but you just automatically pick up on things because you're kind of forced to, I would say, if you want to follow whatever movie or show that you're watching. Yeah.
So I have a question for you. I wasn't planning to ask you this question, so I don't know if you'll know the answer. But The Simpsons, okay? I am fascinated. Okay. I'm fascinated, and I have this informal ongoing poll going on about what Bart Simpson says in each of the languages that he's been translated into. So in English, he says, "Eat my shorts." In Spanish, he says, multiplícate por cero, like multiply yourself by zero. Yeah. What does he say? In Italian, he says, lick my socks, I think. So what does he say in Flemish? Do you know?
I'm actually looking it up as we're talking about it, because I know that, yeah, because I know that a lot of studies have been done on The Simpsons, just because it's so interesting. Also, for example, there's this character that kind of speaks Mexican, but then I asked my husband, for example, I'm like, so wait, you watch The Simpsons in Spanish? Like, what does he say, or how is it funny when Bart Simpson goes, right. Ay caramba, you know, or something like that? And so no, actually, yeah, he says they just play with accents, like the bumblebee guy or whatever the character's name is. Mm-hmm. He speaks Mexican instead of Spanish. So then that's the joke, instead of him just sounding Hispanic.
Right, he just has like a funny accent, that sounds funny to Spaniards.
Yes, exactly. So I thought that was really funny. But about Eat My Shorts, I'm not sure. I'm Googling it right now, but I have no idea. I only know it in English, actually. Yeah, because, you know, that's also the interesting thing about subtitles, is that sometimes I notice that often, even now as an adult, the subtitles are there, but I don't necessarily read them. I just kind of ignore them, especially when we go to the cinema here in the north of Belgium. The first subtitle line is Dutch, or no, sorry, French, and the second subtitle line is Dutch. So you can either follow it in French or in Dutch, but that means they go extra fast because you just have one line
instead
for
of two.
Each language.
Right. Yes,
exactly. So, yeah, I guess that's a special... It's things that I never even thought about before. But right. Then I took my Spanish husband to the cinema here in Belgium for the first time. And he was like, wait, where am I looking at? What am I doing?
Oh, my gosh.
And he actually found the French.
So how does that...
Very helpful. Yeah.
How does that influence... I'm curious how that influences your decisions when there's a movie on that you want to see... And I'm guessing it sounds like in large part they're not dubbed. So you're going to see them. Mm-hmm. You're going to see the movie in the original language, which you may or may not speak. I mean, if it's a Japanese movie, mm-hmm. you probably don't speak the language. And then in your husband's case, he has the option of mm-hmm. listening to that language and then reading the subtitles in two languages, you know, which he doesn't speak as well as his mother tongue. And they're going to go mm-hmm. really fast. So... Personally, what I have come to, because in Spain, the movies are dubbed, which is another yes. conversation, but in the bigger cities, you can find a cinema where there are subtitles and it's not dubbed. But in the city where I live, I was about ready to say the town where I live. I'm not sure Mario would agree with that because it's like 40,000 people. But in the town where I live, everything is dubbed and it drives me bananas. So what I have discovered is that I cannot stomach going to see an American film or an English speaking film that has been dubbed into Spanish. I cannot do it. Mm-hmm. I did it for many years and now I'm just like, you know what, I'm just going to wait and watch it on an airplane or something, or on Netflix or whatever. But I love to go to the cinema when the movie is in Spanish, meaning that it mm-hmm. hasn't been dubbed. So how about you guys? How do you decide what movies to see and what movies not to see?
So yeah, first off, I definitely agree with you. I think that dubbing movies is really annoying just because I'm used to, I don't know, Brad Pitt's voice or something, which I also think that it's an actor's instrument, like your voice and your expression is part of who you are, especially when you're acting. So you'll see his mouth moving a different way, and there's this really either high-pitched voice or like, and where I'm like, this is not Brad Pitt, like what's happening? So luckily my husband is an atypical Spaniard, so to speak, and he doesn't like it either. So whenever we watch a movie on Netflix, when it's in English, we just have English subtitles because he speaks English, but not to that extent where he can just listen to a movie and, you know, follow the whole thing. So we'll just always have subtitles in English. Or same goes when we're watching the news in Dutch, for example, then we have Dutch subtitles, which actually is also another anecdote maybe or peculiar thing is that on the Dutch news or the Belgian news, I should say, there's always subtitles just because the dialects are so, you know, different from each other that there's always subtitles. So my husband didn't understand that. He goes, why are they subtitled? They're speaking your language, right? I'm like, yeah, but they're from a totally different city. And that's because for a long time in Belgium, speaking Dutch was prohibited. Mm-hmm. So the dialects kind of just evolved on their own way while you were forced to speak French at school and at City Hall and all that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're lucky. There's always subtitles and he can kind of follow. But luckily the double subtitle situation is only at the cinema. So okay. Netflix more so than we go to the movies. Yeah.
So when the news provides subtitles, it's not a translation, right? It's just subtitles that tell you exactly what the journalist is saying.
Yes, exactly. So actually when the journalist is talking, there won't be any subtitles, but when they're interviewing someone on the street or whatever, there's always subtitles. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Wow. Well, so much of this is just brand new to me. And I'm guessing I'm not the only one. Do you find that when you meet people who aren't from Belgium or, you know, when you're traveling outside of your country, do you find that you have to explain all this to the people you meet?
Yes, definitely. I've done this explanation like multiple times. And even after doing it, people will just stare at me like, what did you just say? You know, especially when I was on exchange in Ohio, it was small town, rural Ohio. And they were already confused from, you know, me being abroad and everything. And then when I started talking about our language situation in Belgium, you just saw their faces go like, so wait, you speak Dutch? So you're from the Netherlands? I'll be like, no, we have Dutch and French and German. So you're from Germany. You're from France. I'm like, no, just from Belgium. And I did find, it was actually the first time in my life where I was like, okay, yeah, I speak multiple languages. That's pretty cool. I never even considered it that much because here, my generation generally doesn't speak a lot of French anymore, for example. It's all very focused on English, you know, just as internationally, I think that's the case. But even when we say, oh, we don't speak French, we'll still be able to have a small conversation, order at a restaurant, stuff like that. So that's when I realized when I was on exchange in Ohio, like, yeah, actually, I'm pretty lucky to be from such a cool, quirky country.
Yeah. That kind of insight and appreciation for your own circumstances is, I think it's something that comes with age. I mean, I'm going to guess that that sense has really grown in you since you first felt it. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. You know, you grow as a person. And also, when I arrived in Ohio, I was like, oh, yeah, I speak English. You know, I've listened to English shows my whole life. I had English at school, which was British English. Mm-hmm, so first when, you know, I was like, oh, I need new trousers, people were like, what now? I'm like, oh, no, wait, how do you say it? What's going on?
Oh, my God, I'm thinking of you. I'm just, it makes me laugh so hard to think of you saying the word trousers in Ohio.
Yeah.
Because I have said this several times in other interviews, but for our listeners who don't know, I'm from Indiana, which is from the same tri-state area as Ohio. And so I think it's one reason that I just love speaking to you in English, because you're like you could be my sister. Like, your ear for English is so incredible. And it happens that the English that you have absorbed is my English. It's not California English or Toronto English or Sussex English or Australia English. It's my English. And I just feel so at home when I hear you speaking English.
Yeah, I remember that when we first met, you were like, we're from the same tri-state area. And I was so excited that you said that, because actually, you should know, or people that are listening, I don't ever use English anymore. Actually, it's been, I think, maybe 8 years since I've used English daily. So I was kind of nervous also for this interview, because I'm like, oh no, I have to speak English. And I mean, it comes naturally, but still, it's, you know, the accent, and now that I'm speaking Spanish at home every day, I tend to get a little bit nervous in English. But still, when I was at your home visiting you, and you asked me if I wanted pop, I was like, pop, I know what this means. You know, she's not saying soda or... So yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny that I can say pop to a Belgian girl because you've been an exchange student in Ohio, but I can't say pop to like my friends from New York, you know? So I think we should share with people why you were in my home, because we haven't divulged that information yet. In the intro, I shared that you and your husband took this epic bike trip from your home in Belgium to your in-laws' home, where Mario is from, in the south of Spain. And how did you find us? Was that warm showers?
Yeah, so when we traveled, we used the warm shower community, which is really for cyclists looking for places to sleep and, well, shower along the way. And that's when I met you. Well, actually, I wrote to your husband.
Yes, in my husband is a cyclist, and he's on warm showers. Yeah, so that's how exactly. we found each other. Yeah.
And I remember being really excited, because even though I think that my Spanish is almost better than my English now, but still, when Mario goes, oh, we're staying at, you know, the host family we're staying at tonight is Spanish-American. They're a mixed couple like us. And I was like, she's from the States. That's so cool. I'm so excited. I get to speak English. And he was like, but your Spanish is fine. Like, even if she were Spanish, it would be fine. But I just feel, I think, a bigger connection to English because it's a Germanic language like my own. So doesn't matter how many years I'll be studying Spanish, the logic behind a romantic language like Spanish will always be different for me.
When you speak different languages, do you have like a specific feeling that comes with speaking that language? Do you kind of like click into a specific mindset or a specific emotional state when you speak different languages?
Well, let me think about it. I know that my voice changes whenever I'm speaking to my family in Dutch or, you know, English to you right now. My husband will go, you sound so different. I'm like, really? Wow. I didn't even know, you know, it's kind of like your voice, you know, English has a lot of like R and D, you know, voices that are sounds that are like in the back of your throat. So maybe your voice adapts to it. I'm not sure, but I do know that. So right now in my everyday life, I speak Dutch during the day, Spanish at night and on the weekend. And I do find that when I'm at work, sometimes a Spanish word will slip out just because, you know, like the little by the way or, you know, stuff like that will just kind of come out. And my coworkers just look at me like, what? Because it's not like we're living in Spain, you know. They'll be like, oh, the exotic ones here, you know, whatever. But I think it just, I love that when you know several languages, you kind of just pick a little bit from each one and you think, oh, I like this word in English or in Spanish. And that's also why, you know, when I speak to people like you that also speak Spanish or my husband who also speaks Dutch and English a little bit, it's fun because we'll kind of mix up our vocabulary. So yeah, all mixed into one.
Yeah. Just this morning I was taking the laundry out of the washing machine, and it's kind of looks like it's going to rain here and maybe even snow today. So when it came time to hang the laundry out, I decided, well, I better hang this up down in the garage instead of like outside on the lunch, on the line. Mm-hmm. And so I heard myself speaking to my son. My son is bilingual, but he and I always speak in English. He's the one person that I speak English with every single day. And he mm-hmm. has a native level of English. So it's not like speaking to, you know, a student or something. And I heard myself saying, I don't mm-hmm. even remember what the words were, but it was like this complete mishmash of English and Spanish that, I mean, the translation of it was, I'm going down to the garage to hang up the laundry. But it was like two words from English, three words from Spanish, one word from English, and then, yeah. you know, see you in a second in Spanish.
It happens, you know. Also, it happens with food. When there's food that they just don't have in Spain, I'll say the word in Dutch because Mario knows what I'm talking about my husband. And right. yeah, it's just easy that way.
Yeah, yeah. And it makes no sense to translate it if you both know what it means. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
exactly.
So I want to go back. I'm really interested. Okay, so you've mentioned being an exchange student in Ohio. I know you did several different exchange programs. I think you mm-hmm. even did more than one in the United States. So let's go back to when you first left your country. Tell us a little bit about, you know, how old you were, how prepared you felt, and you know what it was like. I'm guessing by that time you had already been studying other languages. What was it like communicating with people outside of, you know, the reality that you were so familiar with in Belgium?
Mm-hmm. Well, so as a kid, I was lucky to already travel a little bit, you know, Spain, Russia, Greece, places like that, but it was always with my parents, so they did the talking. And the first time I went out on my own, I was 14 years old, and because I saw this poster at school saying, you want to learn French or you want to improve your French or something like that. So I was like, yeah, cool, learning languages. This is so me. So my mom agreed, and I went on a summer school to France for like 2 or 3 weeks. And I remember arriving, you know, and thinking, okay, I can speak a little bit of French, but it was with a host family, so they were all like, here's your key, this is the address, this is what you have to do. And yeah, it was a little bit nerve-wracking, because also I figured, you know, if something happens to me or if I get sick, how am I going to communicate with these people, right? But I was lucky. They were a very warm family, and sometimes, you know, they just saw me staring for a minute like, wait, let me think of the word. I'm getting there. But yeah, I just remember that I did get a little bit I did panic a little bit when I was trying to call my parents to say that I arrived safely. And I didn't know that there was such a thing as international phone codes, you know, like +34 for Spain or whatever, mm-hmm. which I hadn't put into my phone. You know, I'd never been abroad on my own. So I remember that like for 2 days or something like that, I couldn't tell them, hey, I've arrived safely, just because I didn't have the country code. So mm-hmm. yeah, mm-hmm. that was funny. But then I think that there's always a way to speak to people that have a different native language. We have hands and feet as well, if anything, you know. So now that I travel, I'm never nervous, even if it's, you know, I remember going to South Korea and they didn't speak any English. You can't even read, you know, you're illiterate basically.
Right.
And in the end, in a restaurant, for example, I just point at a different table and I'll point and I'll be like, this is the money I have. I just hand them out the money and then I point at something and it works, you know.
Right.
There's always a way, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, it all boils down to just getting your point across, right? Communication.
Yeah. And we have our facial expressions as well. Because even imagine I speak English very well, but I say it with a different or like an intonation that's not correct, it would still come across strange, like, I'm so happy. Wait, what? You know? So, yeah.
Exactly. You have to mm-hmm. find that perfect combination of, you know, tone, the music of the language, the words, obviously, gestures, facial expression. Mm-hmm. So that was
yes,
when you were that was when you were
very important. Yeah.
14. You were 14 when you first went abroad. You went to France. You stayed with a host family. Mm-hmm. Then what? Take us through some of your exchange experiences.
Okay, I'll try to do it chronologically so that I don't leave any out. Because, yeah, I'm kind of an exchange addict, I think that you can say. Just because I love also traveling by myself, because you're just forced to speak to people and learn things. So, yeah, I went to France when I was 14 for 2 or 3 weeks. Then when I was 15, I went to England for a month with the same organization. So host family, summer school. And then when I was 18 and finished high school in Belgium, I went to Ohio for a year to live with a host family, go to the local high school, which was definitely a life-changing year for me because it was a whole year, you know. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I also, when I was studying at university in Belgium, I went to Spain for a semester. Then I went back another month with a scholarship, so Spain twice. And then when I did my master's, I went back to the States for a semester at the University of Illinois. So, wow. Now that I hear myself saying it, it's a lot. I hope that that came out okay, that you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But so, yeah. So I do have to say
it's, your year in Ohio was like a gap year, right? Between high school and college.
Yes.
Are you
yes,
glad you
exactly.
did that? I mean, you said it was a life-changing experience. I'm guessing it was a positive experience.
Yes, definitely. I mean, at first I felt very alone, very isolated, just because not only the language, I could communicate with people, even though my English wasn't what it is nowadays, but just the culture and habits, it made me feel very alone also because it was very rural. And as I said, I'm more from a city or a big town. So it was strange for me to live so far away from people. Also, I didn't have a car, so I had to always go, hey, can you take me to the football game or whatever? So in the beginning, I remember the first 2 or 3 months even, I cried a lot. I was like, mm-hmm. what am I doing? This is horrible. Like, I have friends and a family back home. What am I doing? Mm-hmm. But then, I don't know, at a certain point, I just made a click. I made friends, and then it all came together, you know, at mm-hmm. the end, when it was time to leave, I just really didn't want to leave. I thought, this is it. I'm staying forever. Mm. But yeah, I do think that it's something that everyone, if you have a chance, you know, that you should do it just because it broadens your horizons in ways that you can't even imagine.
Mm. And I'm going to guess that just from hearing your description of how alone you felt and how it took, you know, it took a couple of months for you to find your stride and click with people and find your tribe. I'm going to guess that that has made you a more compassionate person. And when you hear about people who are, you know, either studying abroad or are looking for, a new home for whatever reason in another country, that you remember that, experience and what it felt like to be far away.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. I also, I don't know if that, you know, answers your question a little bit, but I worked as a Dutch teacher here in Belgium for 3 years with refugees. So, I mean, that's obviously a different situation because they're running away from war or economic trouble. So obviously they're in a different state of mind, but still I really, mm-hmm. as I was teaching, I could really understand their struggle, like see their faces like, oh, they really want to tell me so much, but they just don't have the tools. So, compassionate, yes, but I think more so patient. It made me very patient to, you know, when you're speaking a different language, even now, you know, me doing this interview, often there's things that I want to say, but I'm not sure if I'm going to say them correctly, so I just don't say them, you know? And I think that teaching was very interesting, especially having the exchange as a background, because it made me, yeah, very patient with my students.
Mm. Well, let's fast forward to meeting your husband, Mario, who we have referred to a couple of times already. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you're studying Spanish and you fall in love while studying in Spain. Is that right?
Yeah, almost. I was actually, so when I was studying in Spain, Mario was studying in Cuba. He went away for a year, and so his room was, you know, was free. His friends rented it out. And as I was living in the apartment, they kept going, oh, our friend that's in Cuba, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, he sounds so nice, but, you know, never going to meet him. But then actually, I received an email from him 2 years after my exchange in Spain saying, hey, I need some help with an English motivational letter. Can you help me? I'm a friend of, you know, so-and-so. And I said, yeah, sure. And so long story short, we actually met in Switzerland because he was doing a voluntary service in Switzerland. And he said, well, your motivational letter got me in. I would love to invite you here and show you know, where I am right now. And yeah, so we saw each other for 5 days in Switzerland and he visited Belgium, and the visit took like 3 years, so, and a marriage, or a wedding day, yeah.
So, wow, that is quite a story. Well, I'm sure, I have no doubt that your Spanish is extremely strong. I mean, based on the fact that this is the English we're hearing, and you say you're a little bit rusty after not using it for
yeah,
8 years.
I feel like it, yeah.
But I'd love to hear, and, you know, this question stems from the fact that I also am in an intercultural marriage. My husband is Spanish as well, although my husband is from central Spain, your husband is from southern Spain, but, you know, pretty similar.
Yeah.
Were there any moments of friction or misunderstanding that came out of the two of you having different mother tongues or being raised in different environments, different cultures?
Well, definitely. I think that we're lucky that we've both traveled a bit, so that just makes us understand each other better because we know about different cultural situations, so we also keep it in mind. We'll go, is this okay for you? How would you want to do it? But I do remember in the beginning of our relationship, because we always spoke Spanish together, even when mine wasn't as good yet, you know, we would use some English here and there, but not so much. But I would feel that he bossed me around a lot just because in Spanish, they use the imperative a lot. So he'll be like, close the door, get me a glass of water, or get, and I'll be like, okay, hold on. you don't get to speak to me like that. But then I visited his family and I thought, oh, wait, they all do it, you know, and they're not, you know, they're not being rude or anything. It's just how they talk.
Right. And it's not just his family either. Yeah. It's not just, I mean, I totally,
oh, it's the whole country.
girl, I totally know what you're talking about. There's this thing where you go to the grocery store and there's, you know, everyone's like gathered around waiting to order their fruit or waiting to order their fish or their meat, you know, depending on what area you're in, or, you know, or if you're in specifically the butcher or the fruit shop, and people just like mill around, but they all know who's next. Like when you walk through the door, you ask, you know, who's next, or,
yeah.
And then when it's your turn, like people step up and they order, and the way they order to my American ear is so rude. It's like, give me that and that and that. But the thing is, it's not rude. It sounds so rude to you and me. I mean, I think I will feel like it's rude until the day I die. But you can't really say it's rude because you and I are not from here. We were not raised here. This is not our mother tongue. We don't get to decide what's rude and what's not in Spanish. It sounds so rude to you and to me, but I really don't think it is to them. It isn't. They're not being rude. They're just speaking Spanish the way they speak Spanish.
Right, exactly. And I mean, obviously, I don't think that my husband is a rude person.
Right.
If not, I wouldn't be with him. And he's actually, you know, he's also well-educated and he's not trying to be rude to people. But it's also that, so especially when Dutch is your native language, it's not a direct language at all. Even to my mother, I'd be like, could you please, perhaps if you have time, close the door or something like that, you know, which to a Spanish ear would be like, okay, say it already. What are you trying to say? Because even when I go to the groceries or the grocery store, for example, I'll go, could you please give me a loaf of bread? And I would do the same when I was in Spain. And they would just look at me like, ¿qué? You know, what? And I was like, I want some bread. And then they're like, oh, just why didn't you say so? You know?
Yeah.
But then I learned that in Spanish, you actually have two forms of the imperative. So you can either say dame, which is give me in an informal way, or deme, using the subjuntivo, which is a grammatical form. And then it's already so much more formal. And when I discovered that, I was like, wow, changing one letter makes me more formal. That's great. You know, I love it. So now I use it all the time.
I wonder if, because I really don't use the, you know, usted form, the formal form of Spanish. I also think it's sort of falling out of favor a little bit. Like, I don't ever hear people use it throughout the day. But I wonder if that's more appealing to your ear because, like in French, there's a formal form. Is there a formal form in Flemish? I mean, were you raised with that in your mother tongue?
Yes, there is.
Okay.
There is. And so if I wouldn't say the formal you, my mom would be like, you're being rude. So I remember also learning English. I was like, wait, so it's just you? It's like you, my friend Kate, and you, Mr. President? How does that work?
Right.
Know? So yes, to me, the usted form is really important. And I also, when we were backpacking through South America, I noticed that in Southern America, or South America, sorry, they use it a lot. Like a lot. Everything is usted. So when you use the informal one, they're like, oh, wow. Where are you from?
Yeah.
<So rude.
laughs> Yeah. So. I remember when when my son was really little, I mean, it was so interesting because as parents, we are charged with teaching our children how to communicate with other people and how to interact with the world and what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. Well, you know, I knew how to do that in English. I knew what felt right and what didn't feel right. My husband was largely in charge of, you know, making sure he was on the right track with Spanish, right?
Yeah.
But there were times when my husband wasn't around. And I was in a situation where my son was speaking Spanish. And so I was, you know, I was the adult. I was the one who had to make sure that it was okay. And I remember, I mean, when he was really little, like 3, we were visiting his grandmother and it was time to go. And I said to Lucas, I said, go give your grandma a kiss and say thanks for a nice visit, you know, like a nice little boy. And he went and gave her a kiss, which she loved. And then he said, gracias por una visita muy agradable. And she looked at him and in that same tone that you and I are talking about, she was like, you don't have to say thank you to me. And then, but she was so, she was so sort of brusque about it. Her tone was so brusque that poor little Lucas looked at me like, you told me to say thank you. And then I got in trouble. So it is just so hard to walk that line. I mean, have you and Mario talked about what the future might look like for the two of you? I mean, are you going to continue to be in Belgium? Do you think you might be in Spain someday? Have you guys talked about what language to raise your children in?
Yeah, definitely. We've talked about it because I'm probably the worst Belgian promoting Belgium, but I don't want to live in Belgium in the future. Right now, it's okay. We're young. There's a lot of jobs here. Like, the economy's good. So that's one of the reasons we're here. But I would love to move to Spain just because of the nature. And I love Spain. And so we talked about it because Mario, he was like, well, you don't want to live in Belgium. I don't want to live in Spain. Like, my own country is so boring, you know. But then we talked about other countries, you know, Scandinavian countries or Switzerland, which he loves. And I said, okay, but then we have to agree on a language. You know, Switzerland, I'm like, French side, yes. German side, no. And he's like, oh, okay, so Switzerland's out. You know, we talked about it in a really practical way. But I think in the end we'll want to moved to northern Spain because it's new to him too. He's from the south, so the culture there is different. And if we do have kids, he said, you know, wherever we live, I want you to only speak Dutch to them. Because also he loves how educado the children are here, like how
polite.
well
polite,
exactly, how polite, how well-mannered. Thank you. And so he said, I love that about Dutch, because for example, one of the things my mother's always said to me was, you have to speak with two words, and that's a very Dutch thing. You know, if I would tell my mother yes, she would be like, excuse me? No, it's like, yes, mom, or no, sir, or can I have a cookie, please? You know, it's always the more words, the better. I think that we will definitely have to incorporate that into our education, our children's education.
Well, I really appreciate hearing about your specific situation. It is so, so interesting to me. And I think we could talk for a couple more hours, a couple more days.
Yeah.
But this is a conversation that's part of a series on language. So before we start to wrap things up, let's take a step back and talk about language as a concept. How would you even define the term language?
That's a difficult question because so I studied linguistics in college. So I look at language as a combination of sounds and signs that together form a system. You know, I look at it in a very theoretical way. But in the end, it's just a necessary means to communicate. And I think that it's, yeah, part of who we are, part of how we can express ourselves, make friends, connect to other people. So I love to think that language is something inherently human. We're also the only species that, you know, can communicate this way. So I love to think of it as well with a little bit more magic, you know, like, oh, it started out right about the same time everywhere in the world. It's not like you say, oh, in Africa, they developed a language, but then in Europe, they just communicated with their hands. No, like at some point in history, everyone started creating language, basically. So I love to think about it.
And how about, let's talk a little bit about how language affects us. I mean, your specific situation is that, you know, you've told us about these exchange programs you've been on. You love to travel. You're working now in the tourism sector. What can you say about how language affects us as people?
I personally believe that the more languages you know, the more open-minded you get to be. Just automatically, kind of, because each language has, I believe, its own view of the world, even in words, for example, that can be translated. That's what, you know, sometimes in English, you can say a certain thing that when I want to say it in Dutch, I'm like, oh, dang it, we don't have it. Like, I don't know how to say the word.
And so what about the opposite? Can you share any words from Dutch or from maybe a different language that you speak that can only be expressed in that language?
Yeah, so for example, in Dutch, we have lots and lots of words for rain, because it rains almost all the time.
Why
here.
Would that
so
be?
When, you know, yeah, exactly. So there's, I'll be like, oh, it's this type of rain or this type of rain. And then, you know, Mario will look at me like, okay, so it's raining. It's rain. I'm like, no, it's, you know. So yeah, there's lots of words for rain. And we also have one of my favorite words. It's uitwaaien, and it literally means to blow out, but if I say it like that, it sounds a little bit weird, but it's like, oh, I'm going to the seaside to uitwaaien, like literally let the wind kind of take your troubles away and just enjoy the fact of it being windy. So yeah, I love that word, but I'm never going to be able to use it in any
other language.
So
is it specifically related to the seaside and to wind?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Actually, I'm not even from the seaside, but also Holland, you know, has a large coastline. Belgium has a small coastline, but I think that maybe it just found its way into the language also because it is a gloomy country in that sense, you know, lots of rain, lots of wind. Mm. So I also notice with my husband, for example, he's from a very warm climate and he has a lot of words that are related to, you know, the sun or staying like at the table for a really long time. You know how in Spanish they say sobremesa,
la
like
sobremesa.
Eat, and then for yeah, exactly, like for 3 more hours you're just sitting there. I'm like, what is this? And he'd be like, sobremesa. I'm like, oh yeah, okay. So I love that. I love how it, you know, kind of expresses
oh my gosh, I remember one time there was this girl who had come to Cuenca. She was probably, I don't know, like early 20s or something. She had come to Cuenca to work as an au pair. And I could tell that she was kind of having a hard time and feeling kind of alone and homesick. And so I invited her to join us for lunch in the mountains, you know, maybe like 40 minutes away from Cuenca, like a drive up into the mountains, but not too far, on a Sunday. Okay, so if you say to a Spaniard, let's go to lunch in the mountains on Sunday, you pretty much know you're not going to be home before dark. Am I right?
It's a day trip.
This poor girl.
It's a day trip, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this poor girl, we're sitting at, well, this poor girl, but also my poor husband, because he really wanted to show her, like, the culture and the food and what it feels like to go to the mountains for lunch. And so he... We're sitting there at the table and he's kind of using a little bit of English. She's using her very little bit of Spanish. And she like leans over to me and she says, I'm supposed to meet someone at 4.
Oh, at 4. No. Oh my God.
And you know, lunch in Spain doesn't even start on a Sunday until 2:30 or 3. We're an hour away from Cuenca. We haven't even been served lunch yet. And I said, you might want to text that person because you are not going to be there. But I thought, she will never forget how long lunch takes on a Sunday.
Oh, that's so funny. Same thing happened to me in my husband's town. You know, his friends would go like, oh, let's meet up tonight. And so for me, because, you know, dinner in Belgium is at 6 normally. So tonight means at 8 or 9, you know, and they'll call me at 11. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to sleep. I don't know what you're doing, but, you know, you said tonight. The night's over. Like, you've had your chance.
Yeah, 11 is like the middle of the night.
Yeah, exactly. And but they will be like, oh, or we'll see each other in the afternoon and text me at 7. I'm like, yeah, no, it's evening time. You what is
yeah.
this?
Well, what's that's going the on? Thing. In Spanish, there's no word for evening. It's like afternoon and then night. So when they say por la tarde, it could be any time. Like, pretty much it's going to be after 5 because that's when lunch is, like, officially over at 5. It's going to be, like, any time between 5 and dark. The tarde is any time between 5 and dark.
That's true.
Right?
Huh. I never
did
even
you just learn something?
Way, but it's true. They don't have a word. Yeah. I did.
Well,
it's called the Listen
Laura,
podcast, so I was listening intensely.
I feel like we could go on and on, but unfortunately, we are not going to be able to go on and on, and we're just going to have to wrap up for now. But to be continued, I would love to have you back on the show to talk about your bike adventure
okay,
across
cool.
Europe. That would be awesome. So we'll be in touch about that. But thank you so much for this wonderful conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show. It's been great.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you so much. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye, Laura.
Bye-bye. Bye, Kate. Bye.
Next time on Listen, we'll be joined by Jose Garcia, a translator and teacher who fell in love with English while listening to British and American folk music. Hope you can join us. Listen is sponsored by RAV, cutting-edge cuisine in a traditional setting. For a look at the RAV dining experience, visit www.rafsanpedro.es. That's www.rafsanpedro.es. The producers of Listen are Lauren Lovett and Laura Munoz Solera. Our technical director and engineer is Iñaki Martinez, with original music by Lucas Munoz Jetmore. I'm Kate Jetmore, and this is Listen.